The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, March 30th, 2020.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do, because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Wow, shelter in place. First time I ever experienced anything like this. And, oh, God, listening to all the political BS is just amazing to me. And I hope to have a very uplifting show this morning for all you folks that are all sheltered in your homes and with your children. I know it must be a real, real challenge for all of us. I know it is for me. I mean, even though I don't leave the house that much, it's amazing just knowing that I can't leave the house. It just makes me feel a little bit more frustrated. Well, March is National Women's History Month, and this year women are celebrating the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment, guaranteeing and protecting women's constitutional right to vote. Amazing. And here we are in the middle of a pandemic. It's just absolutely amazing that this is even happening. This is the last show of the month, and I just don't know where March went. It felt like it flew away. And we have a special treat for all of our listeners that are all cozied up in their homes. What a challenge we're all facing, and I'm grateful we can come to the studio. This is live. You know, we wiped down everything. We came in, we put alcohol and wiped down all the desk and all the engineering equipment here and made sure that we're safe. Ken is wearing gloves right now, so when he touches all the instruments, it just in case there's some sort of who knows what on the equipment. But we have faith that everything is going to somehow come to an end, and we're going to survive this. You know, I saw a real interesting quote by this woman, Eileen Fisher. She's a founder and chairwoman of Eileen Fisher Incorporated, and she wrote it. This is her quote: "It's a courageous act to just be with whatever is happening at the moment." I'm going to repeat that again. It's a courageous act to just be with whatever is happening in the moment. All of it, the difficult as well as the wonderful. And right now we're at a difficult place, but even in the difficult place, we can still have wonderment. We can still talk to our families on the phone. We can still call friends. We can still do all kinds of internet excitement. I mean, I'm playing Rummy Cue with my granddaughter, which is something I've been wanting to do for years. So here we have the pandemic, and it opens the door for us to do that. I know it sounds kind of simple, but it's these simple things that are going to get us through all of this. Well, I'm doing something very different for this show. So you got to bear with me. You got to use your imagination a little bit and just open your heart. I have a very special guest this morning. Joining me on the phone will be Alice Stokes Paul, who was an American suffragist, feminist, and women's rights activist, and one of the main leaders and strategists of the campaign for the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which prohibited sex discrimination in the right to vote. I know you will enjoy this presentation. Alice Paul will be presented by writer-performer Kathleen Haney, who wrote this wonderful piece. I was at the Playhouse, the 6th Street Playhouse here in Santa Rosa, and I heard her piece on Alice Paul, and I says, you know something, we got to turn this into a radio script. People have to hear of the struggle that women went through. Another special treat, and I hope you see it as a treat, Ken and I will be reading a piece that is very dear to our heart. We are celebrating our 20th anniversary on Wednesday, April Fool's Day. We call ourselves Two Fools in Love. Also, I found out a very interesting thing, and I want to wish a happy anniversary to Bernie and Alicia. Alicia Sanchez is our president, and I found out that on April Fool's Day, just like Ken and I, they're celebrating their 27th year. I mean, it's very interesting having this conversation with Alicia and finding out that we had another thing in common. So happy anniversary to Ken and Elaine, and happy anniversary to Bernie and Alicia. And a special, I want to do a special shout out for Alicia Sanchez, who's our board president, and all the board members and all the volunteers here at KBBF, that we are able to keep the station alive and well and serving our Hispanic community, which to me is an honor to be on the show, to be one of the English speakers on the show. It's really very, very interesting. Well, let's see. This is the last Monday of the month, and we're going to do the Women's Spaces Pledge. And during this time, I personally believe it is very, very important to keep our self-esteem up. But before we do that, I want to talk about the National Women's History Month and the 2020 history theme, which is Valiant, V-A-L-I-A-N-T, Women of the Vote. The 2020 theme celebrates the women who have fought for women's right to vote in the United States. In recognition of the centennial of the 19th Amendment, they were honoring women from the original suffrage movement as well as the 20th and 21st century women who have continued the struggle fighting against poll taxes, literacy tests, voter roll purges, and other more contemporary forms of voter suppression to ensure voting rights for all. You know, for more information on all the history and to look at the, what they're celebrating, like I said, they're celebrating Valiant Women of the Vote. If you can go on the womenhistoryalliance.org, you can find out all that information. And one of the women honored this year, I'm very excited to say, was Lucy Burns. Lucy was born July 28, 1879, and she made her transition on December 22, 1966. She's an American suffragette and women's right advocate. Burns left her studies at Vassar College to join the British suffrage movement as a member of the Women's Social and Political Union. During her time overseas, Burns perfected her suffrage protest tactics. She worked very closely with Alice Paul, who will be joining us in the next segment of this show. So a shout out to Lucy Burns. What an impression these women made on me in particular. And one of the things that's very interesting, when I was talking to Kathleen Haney and we were working on turning this into somewhat of a radio script, both of us came to the same conclusion, you know, that why was it, you know, why did it take so long? And how wonderful it was that Lucy Burns and Alice Paul worked so diligently to make this happen. And there's a great movie called Iron-Jawed Angels. It stars Hilary Swank, who plays Alice Paul. And I would really recommend that folks, you know, you're at home, you know, listen to some good films, you know, get yourself educated, you know, read, you know, there's all kinds of things you can do. I feel this isolation or this shelter is actually a time out for many of us, that we can sit and kind of gather our thoughts and say, you know, what direction do we want to go to? You know, what is life all about? And the most interesting thing for me that's happening is, for the first time in my life, like I said, I'm experiencing this. But, you know, they talk about the oneness. They talk about the allness, like we're all one on this planet, you know. And sometimes you scratch your head, like, how can I be one when that person's so separate from me? Well, what it means is, if one person's in jeopardy, we're all in jeopardy. And we're really seeing that in this pandemic. You know, we're all in this together, not just in the United States, but across the globe. You know, we're communicating. We're trying to solve problems. We're trying to work together. I mean, this is a historic event. And my prayer, to be honest with you, my prayer is that we somehow work it out. I mean, we're beginning to see right now how important it is that not only we have housing for everybody, but that we have medical available for everybody. Because when something like this happens, you can't afford to have people on the street sick that are not getting care, because it's going to affect all of us. So we're all in the same boat, and we have to join hands, and we have to do the very best that we can, You know, and for the people out there who seem to think that they have to make money when something like this happens, why don't you try something different? You know, we just were reading in the Press Democrat, a dear friend of ours who has he has a distillery or a company. You know, they're making sanitation. A group of people got together and said, let's do it. Let's make sanitation for everybody. Instead of waiting, listening, oh, you got to do this, you know, you got to do that. They just did it. And that's the way we have to confront this. We have to confront this together. Well, you know, our history is our strength, and I thought I would just bring up, besides Lucy Burns, you know, I hope folks remember that the National History Alliance, that is really responsible for the National Women's History Month, and it's just an amazing organization. One of the founders was our co-founder, Molly McGregor. I want to do a shout out to her and thank her very much for all she has done. It's a real shame. You know, we had a lot of activities planned, and the National Organization for Women was going to do a program on with Rachel Carson, Silent Spring. We had to cancel that. But there will be other programs in the future, and I know we are going to have a future. Well, just remember, like I said, our history is our strength, and on March 31st, 1888, the National Council of Women of the United States, organized by Susan B. Anthony, Clara Barton, Julia Ward Howe, and Sojourner Truth, among others, the oldest non-sectarian organization in the United States. Can you believe that? 1888. Wow. That's amazing to me. We've been at work a long time. And then on March 31st, I love this because this really became when it's so sad when I think that we can't go to the museum to see the suffrage, you know, for Me Too. Well, I can't wait till it opens again. But on March 31st, 1776, Abigail Adams writes to her husband, John, who is helping frame the Declaration of Independence, and cautions, listen to this, remember the ladies. Remember the ladies. Well, it took us over 100 years before we were finally able to get the vote. And here's another good thing. I'd like to just bring out birthdays. And a happy birthday to Pearl Bailey, who was a jazz and blues singer. And she won many amateur contests in Harlem and Philadelphia when she was 22. She sang with the famous Cab Calloway and starred in movies. She was a Goodwill Ambassador for the United Nations in 1979, which was quite a feat for a young African-American woman. And then on March 29th, which is really interesting, Joan Kelly set up a Master's of Arts program in Women's History at Sarah Lawrence College with Greta Lerner, and advanced feminist scholarships by calling for a double vision to resolve conflicts inherent in the desire for female inclusion under male dominance. Very interesting. We have had a lot of struggles, lady, to get where we want. Well, one last thing I want to remind you of, that on March 31st, which is going to be tomorrow, Muriel Wright, who is a Choctaw Indian, she was a teacher, historian, author, and editor, and made her way to educate and work with many young people. And it was quite a feat for her at that time. Well, I see that Ken put up our Women's Spaces pledge. Never. You know, we have to keep our self-esteem up. You know, when we listen, you know, they don't have masks, they don't have sanitizers, you know, these things for the breathing. I mean, all the things that they don't have. And finally, the president has issued orders to start building some of this stuff. But at the same time, people are fearful. They have self-doubt. You know, I think of the homeless out there. I think of all the different people that are struggling with this. But the most important thing is that you have to look at yourself, no matter what your circumstances are, and realize you are a human being, and you have a right to be here, and you have a right to have good, solid self-esteem. Well, the whole idea behind the pledge is just to remind us it's not an outside world, it's more of an inner world. The more that you feel that strength inside, the more that you can cope with things. One of the things that I noticed during this horrible time that we're having, that because Ken and I have things in place, we meditate, we do Tai Chi, we do all these things, and how they come in handy when the so-called blank hits the fan, if you know what I mean. Well, let's do the pledge together. And like I remind my listeners, I wrote this for my beautiful grandson, Ryan Jensen, who now is a father himself. It's just amazing. He was about 6 years old when I wrote this for him. And we used to say it all the time when we would be driving. So let's go. I'm going to say it, and you repeat it after me. And I'm going to ask Ken to please join me. Me and Ken are here. We're all alone in the studio, but I'm imagining guests sitting right across from me. Okay, let's go. One, two, three. My self-esteem does not depend
on anything
outside of me.
My self-esteem
depends
on my relationship
with myself
and my higher power.
I just love that. I'm going to say it very slowly. My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. That means other people's judgments or other people's ideas of you are not as important as the idea you have about yourself. My self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power. You know, yesterday I went outside and I looked at the clouds. Oh my God, they were so beautiful. They were just so beautiful. They were white with little patches of, you know, like gray in it where you knew that it was going to rain. And I looked up at the sky and the sky was so blue and the air felt so crisp. And I said, that's my higher power, the beauty and of the clouds of the day and watching the hummingbirds and watching the trees grow and all the things that go on in your backyard. That's the creator. That's the higher power. So if you're searching or wondering about that word, it really has nothing to do with religion. It has more to do with the expansion, in my mind, of the universe. I used to say my self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and who, the woohoo. You know, I made all kinds of endings with it, but I really decided that higher power is the best way to present it. So I'm going to say it one more time, and then we're going to go into a musical break. My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. My self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power. Well, I'm really glad I'm reminded of that this morning, because sometimes I even forget. Before I do the show, I read the pledge 5 times to make sure that I'm centered and that I know that what I'm going to say and what I'm doing, I'm just doing the best I can. And my self-esteem doesn't depend on what everybody thinks. All I know, it depends on what I think and what I'm trying to do. Although I have to admit, we all want to be loved and liked. Don't ever deny that. Anyway, we're going to take a beautiful musical break. And what I decided to do is, because it is Women's History Month, and, you know, this is one of my heroes, Harriet Tubman. When I think of Harriet Tubman and the Underground Railroad and what she did, it gives me confidence. It gives me courage. Harriet Tubman was an American abolitionist and political activist. Born into slavery, Tubman escaped and subsequently made some 13 missions to rescue approximately 70 enslaved people, including family and friends, using the network of the Underground Railroad. We're going to play the song Harriet Tubman, sung by Holly Near. When I think of Harriet, like I said, it gives me courage and strength. And when we return, I'm so excited, we will be talking with Alex Paul Stokes, who is an American suffragist, feminist, and women's activist, and one of the main leaders and strategists of the campaign for the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. So let's go ahead.
One night I dreamed I was in slavery. About 1850 was a time. Sorrow was the only sign, and nothing around to ease my mind. Then out of the night appeared a lady leading a distant pilgrim band. First mate, she said, pointing her hand, make room aboard for this young woman. Come on up, I got a lifeline. Come on up to this train of mine.
boy, got a lifeline. Whew. It gives me the chills when I think of what you went through. Can you imagine the courage? Oh, with people chasing her. Oh, it just gives me the chills when I think about it. For you just joining us, you are listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. I want to remind my listeners the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You are listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holt. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest. Joining me on the telephone is Alice Stokes Paul, who is an American suffragist, feminist, and women's rights activist, and one of the main leaders and strategists of the campaign for the 19th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, which prohibits sex discrimination in the right to vote. I know you will enjoy this presentation. Alice Paul will be presented by writer-performer Kathleen Haney, who wrote this wonderful piece. Let me set the scene for you. Right now, Alice is in her home, a large country mansion in Moorestown, New Jersey. She treasures her Susan B. Anthony desk. She prepared suffrage newspapers and writings, votes for women, sashes, and other items from her activist work for women. Alice has been an intrinsic part of the political life of D.C., was actively involved in the writing of the preamble of the United Nations, and has continued her work for the Equal Rights Amendment, leveraging political pressure where she can. She has been a strong Quaker warrior, politically savvy, yet true to Quaker humility. She is in her retiring self who shuns the limelight in favor of supporting others. Well, good morning, Alice. Welcome. Welcome to Women's Spaces. And thank you for doing this interview. Please.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Holt, and good afternoon to you from here in New Jersey.
Well, you can call me Elaine, Alice. Anyway,
okay,
why don't we start out by telling us what happened to you and the other women that you were involved with?
Well, you are a radio host, and I will tell you what happened to me, Alice Paul, and the rest of us. But you must continue your work with legislators and the political community to urge them to support women's rights. There is work we must do today, now, to get the Equal Rights Amendment passed. Now, I don't know if every degradation of women will ever be corrected, but as long as I can remember, I have always held the Quaker view of my ancestors that men and women are equal. Upon my college graduation in 1905, I did practice social work, but I soon realized that social work would never bring about the changes on a national level that were required. I needed to learn more, and I was guided to Brookwood School in England, and I was led to the meetings of suffragette Emmeline Pankhurst. And there, I found my place in the world. I joined marches. I petitioned on the streets. I even took my place being a public speaker, and eventually endured being arrested. But I became part of the movement, and I learned the necessary methods and means to get the vote for women.
Wow, what an accomplishment. But what were some of your thoughts and feelings at that time?
Well, I had thought long and hard about what I must do. I had no rights. The police could do anything they wanted to me. And I was scared and feared shaming my family. Yet, we had to enlist public opinion to effect change. The first time my mother read in the papers what was happening to me, she was scared. But she had no rights to her children. She had no rights to me. And because my father had died, she asked my uncle to intervene on my behalf. But he said no. The family should be proud of me, as we are all proud of our male ancestor who was in prison for standing up to tyranny. The blood running in my veins from my courageous ancestors clarified what I must do.
Wow. So what happened after then, Alice? You know, what were some of the other issues?
Well, back home in America, I joined the National American Women's Suffrage Party. I had to find strength to organize, to endure. But the connections, the graciousness, the lifelong dear friends who stood arm in arm together with me, with us, facing first the most powerful men in England and then in America, held together the fabric of our force.
Oh, wow. What was your strategy, and what happened after that?
Well, we gladly accepted any gift of time or money. Lucy Branham said all she knew to do was cook and clean house. So she and her mother set up a restaurant right by the White House and served lunch and dinner to the press. We built on connections that women had to men in positions of power and influence. When the D.C. police would not give us enough police protection for our procession down Pennsylvania Avenue before President Wilson was to be sworn in, it was Mrs. Rogers' brother-in-law, the Secretary of War, who sent in the U.S. Cavalry on horseback to keep order. And we made every use of the Postal Service, the telephone, and even had three car trains across the country. And, of course, the suffragist news booklet, Educated and Persuaded.
Well, one of the interesting things that I found when I was doing some research is that I found they called you militants. I mean, from what I'm hearing you say is that you were not getting much protection from the police, and here you're being called militants. What was that all about?
Yes. The male police, the male press, they did say we were militant, but can you label processions, ridings, being beaten, being arrested, tied up, having tubes slammed down our throats, facing death at the hands of others? Can you call that militancy? No. Each one of us acted in the most profound way of Quaker humility and nonviolence.
You know, what I find interesting about this, Alice, is that all you wanted was the vote, equal rights. I mean, very, very interesting. Well, Alice, what inspired, you know, I know the next step you took is all of a sudden the women were going in front of the White House. What inspired you to do those protests?
Well, President Wilson stopped meeting with our deputation, stating that he said the same thing and that we said the same thing over and over to no avail. So we began the day and night protests at the White House. They thought the cold and rain and wind and snow of winter would stop us. They thought the repeated arrests for jailings and for obstructing traffic would stop us. And when Lucy Burns burned the banner with the president's words on it, calling for liberty and freedom for all, they arrested and sentenced all 33 of us.
Oh, my goodness. They actually arrested you. Well, talk about that. I know that what you talk about that there was a night of terror. Can you give us a little background on that?
Yes. That did set off the night of terror, November 14, 1917.
And that's when you were arrested?
Well, after we were arrested, yes. We were sentenced, and then we were taken to jail. The warden had Lucy Burns hung naked all the cold November night, with her handcuffed wrists chained to the cell bars above her head, leaving her bleeding and struggling to breathe. They smashed Dora Lewis's head against an iron bed. Alice Kosu thought Dora was dead and suffered a heart attack. Mary Nolan, 73, had her cane taken from her, although she said she would walk, and she was grabbed, dragged, and kicked. They sent me to St. Elizabeth's Asylum, thinking they could label me insane and put me away until I died. Most women who were committed did die in the asylum.
Oh, my goodness. How did you ever get out of that horrible situation?
I will forever be in gratitude to Dr. William A. White, who defied the power of the presidency, and he certified me competent. He saved my life. Then they sent me back to jail to join the others.
Talk a little bit about the conditions of the jail. I heard that they were just awful.
Well, the food was infested with mealworms. The only water came from an open pail. There were rats in the cell. We sang. We began the hunger strikes. And then the forced feedings began. They would take me to a room and tie down my arms and feet. They shoved a metal crank into my mouth, cutting my lips and gums, and turned the screw to spread my jaw wide open. Then they forced a tube into my mouth. I gagged as I felt it go all the way down into my stomach. Sounds of pain screamed from my body. Raw eggs were forced into the tube and down to my stomach. The pain was excruciating as the tube was pulled out, bit by bit. I was left, my insides convulsing, my clothes bloodied and vomit stained.
Oh, my goodness, Alice. What a struggle. All this because you wanted the vote. But there was a backlash. And talk about that and how women were able to finally move forward.
Yes. When the people read in the press of what happened to us, there was moral outrage. And when the legislators heard, there was political embarrassment. The outrage against the atrocity of what they did to us pushed the male legislators, and indeed, President Wilson himself, to finally act. The Congress was forced to act. And the vote was called in the House. And in 1919, 41 years after being introduced into the Senate, the bill passed the Congress. And by the next year, 1920, enough states ratified the Susan B. Anthony Amendment.
Oh, Alice, congratulations. I mean, all I can say, congratulations. And thank you so very much for this wonderful, wonderful interview and all that you've done in the name of women and the right to vote. Any last words, my friend?
Yes, I do have the Susan B. Anthony desk sitting in my home today. Lucy Burns and I excitedly followed in the footsteps of Susan B. Anthony when the National American Woman Suffrage Party sent us to lead their D.C. branch. We named Senator Sargent's original 1878 bill as the Susan B. Anthony Amendment. But when the National American Party swayed off course to try to get the vote state by state, we broke off and formed the National Woman's Party. And we continued working for federal change, for the amendment. And it was our group who endured the atrocities and struggles as we stayed on course, honoring the work of Susan B. Anthony, calling for an amendment to the Constitution. And when President Wilson finally announced his decision to support our suffrage, he honored the National American Party. And I ask you, did he want the memory of the tortures that we in the National Women's Party endured to fade from history? Will the next generation understand what we endured? Will our struggles against the degradation of women, our struggles that finally led to the vote for women, be remembered? Will women continue to work now, do the work now required for the Equal Rights Amendment to become part of the United States Constitution?
Well, Alice, that remains to be seen for sure. What a great interview, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on Women's Spaces. And hope you continue with your wonderful, wonderful work. Thank you.
Thank you.
What a wonderful interview. I mean, to think that we could bring Alice Paul alive on the radio like that. Let me just tell you just a little bit about Alice Stokes Paul. Alice Stokes Paul was born January 11, 1885 in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. She was the eldest of four children and a descendant of William Penn, the Quaker founder of Pennsylvania. She was also an American suffragist, feminist, and the women's rights activist. Wonderful. She passed away on July 9th, 1977, at the age of 92. Anyway, are you still on the phone, Kathleen?
Yes, I am here, Elaine.
Well,
thank you so much.
That was a wonderful, wonderful thing. So let's hear a little bit about you. We have about 2 minutes left here. Let's let's talk a little bit about you and about the Iron-Jawed Angels, how this inspired you.
Okay. Thank you, Elaine. I just want to tell you, I am so thrilled to be here and do this interview with you and have other women hear about what other women endured so that we can have our vote and value what they did for us. I had been taking classes at Sixth Street Playhouse with Lenny Dean, and it was during that time that I was given by a friend of the movie Iron-Jawed Angels, and I was horrified and gained deep respect for what women endured to get us the vote. So I was impassioned and inspired to write what they did to Alice during that course of study, and I performed it during those studies and also was fortunate enough to perform it elsewhere. And as you mentioned, it was one of the many other pieces on the program at the Women's Festival at Sixth Street Playhouse earlier in March.
Well, I thought it was a wonderful, wonderful performance, and that's why I invited you on. Well, listen,
I thank you so much.
I thank you.
I'm thrilled to be here.
I thank you, and I can't wait till we listen to it tonight. And I just hope you know, their people are, you know, they're sheltered in. I mean, it's just such a wonderful piece to listen to. Well, listen, Kathleen, we're going to take a little bit of a musical break now, and the song that I'm playing is one of my, you know, I think, can I have that? Can I have our playlist? Can the song I'm going to be playing is, I know, to me, it's a very spiritual song, and I love Leanne Rimes. I love her. I think she has the most beautiful voice in the world. And the song is I Believe. And why am I picking this song? First of all, we just heard from the story of Alice Stokes Paul, you know, which really, look what they went through. We got the vote by one vote. I mean, one vote. If, you know, if that young man had not voted, we would not be voting today. We'd still be struggling, just like we are with the Equal Rights Amendment. And then with all the pandemic that's going on, people sheltered in, people somehow, a lot of people I know out there start to lose faith, they get frustrated, and this song is just to remind us that we are human beings, and we have to believe that the good will come out of this, just like the good came out. Look at what she went through in the jails, being waterboarded, being force-fed, all those things that happened, and yet they came out as champions. They got us the vote. They did their purpose because they believed. They believed in each other. They believed in their cause. And they believed in the future for their children. So let's go ahead and listen to I Believe by Leanne Rimes. And we come back. I have a special treat for you. We're going to have, Ken and I are going to read a wonderful poem that we wrote in honor of our anniversary of 20 years, Friends and Lovers. But let's go on right now and listen to Leanne Rimes and I Believe.
I believe for every drop of rain that falls, a flower grows. I believe that somewhere in the darkest night, a candle glows.
That song tears me apart. Every time I hear a newborn baby cry, reminds me of when I heard the first cry of my great-granddaughter, Satori Trinity. Oh, my God. It was just, I can't even explain it anymore. Anyway, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holt. And without further ado, I want to introduce my partner, my life partner, Ken Norton. And Ken and I are going to read an original poem called Friends and Lovers, written by me and scripted by Ken. And let me just give you a little background on this. You know, Ken and I met about 25 years ago. We were at a workshop, and I remember that it was the last moment of the workshop. He stood up and said something, and that was the first time I noticed him. And my heart just went thump, 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 thump. And I said to myself, I've got to meet this person. And I did. And that started the first five years of our relationship, up, down, and all around. And then 20 years ago, we decided to become life partners. But in between that, I wrote this poem, and we have had the honor of performing at several places. So I'm really excited, and I want to thank you, Ken, for your willingness to perform it with me. And I figured, you know, this is a special time right now, and the whole idea behind Women's Spaces is to see if we can just uplift each other. So let's go. We're going to read the piece, Friends and Lover.
I remember when we simply called each other friend. When did that end? It wasn't long ago I would pick up the phone and call you and let you know I was alone. We'd laugh and cry and tell each other about the adventures of our day. We never gave a thought to beginnings or endings. We were just friends.
I don't remember missing you until I began kissing you. I don't remember worrying about your being cold or about me being too old until we began kissing and holding, and I felt the depth of you within me. It seemed so much easier back then when we just called ourselves friends. I get scared when I think of growing to love you.
When we called ourselves just friends, I loved you in a different way. I was not afraid that you would leave me one day. I would just listen to what you had to say. There was no charge, no emotion, no attachment. Words were just words.
If a friend was coming by, I did not need to know who or what they were to you. A friend was simply coming by. You told me of past or present lovers or any experience for that matter. I do not remember my cheeks getting hot or my heart beating any faster. I was neutral and thought you were sharing and living our life, and I was sharing and living mine. How strange how it all changed when we became lovers.
Perhaps I lie to myself, and I'm not as free as my fantasies would like me to be. It seems that just being friends is less tearful and less fearful. Why, I ask myself, does it all change? Strange, but it does change. I feel like a child when it comes to relationships. It feels like no one has shown me the way. No one has shown me what to do when I feel inside the feeling of, I love you.
Oh, I don't want it to change. I want us to be friends. Lovers come and go, but a friend is forever. I want to be natural and move in our own time, in our own rhythms. Is that possible? Is that true? Is this something that I or both of us can do?
At times I feel trapped. I want to move forward, even when I feel my insecurities cause me to move backwards. Backwards in time, when I hung on for dear life, because I had no sense of self. I slip back. It's so subtle, yet so real. It's almost like I'm suspended in space. All I know is that I am about to lose something, and I am afraid it is you. When I fear the loss, I feel like I'm being tossed aside. Oh, I know what it means. It means I'm lacking my own self-worth, my own self-esteem. It never seemed to happen when we called ourselves just friends.
I want us to be friends. I want us to be lovers. I want us to respect one another and give each other space. Is that grace? Is that grace we learn when friends become lovers? There is so little I know, except with each encounter, each challenge, I grow and know how deeply I want us to be friends. Not just friends, but friends and lovers.
Lovers and friends. What does that mean?
Oh, a lover is just that. A lover, one who satisfies those lustful, delicious needs. And a friend, well, a friend is everything in between. Yet I know in order to have total lust, I must trust that you will be there for me in my times of need. All I can conclude is that we were friends first. And if lovers choose to go away, I want the friendship to say,
Let us take a stand.
That we will transcend all we need to transcend to be forever friends. Oh, what a thrill to read that with you, Ken. I just loved it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Elaine.
You know, it's just amazing. You know, when I wrote the poem, I wrote it, oh God, I forget how many years ago now. It's been quite a while. But when I wrote it, I had no idea that our relationship would last as long as it lasted. So I thank you from the bottom of my heart for reading that poem with me and for sharing all the things that you share with me. Well, you know, it's really interesting, since we're reading poetry, I thought I would read another poem. And I'm looking for all my music, and I can't find any. I'd like to do another song, but it doesn't look like I have one to do, so we'll just have to sit here with the poetry. This poem that I wrote was, one day I was sitting there and I was thinking to myself, you know, why is the world changing so fast? I mean, all the things that I grew up with are no longer there. I mean, it's just very interesting. So I wrote this poem called I'm from the Old School. And it's a kind of an interesting poem, really, when you kind of think about it. Let me just read it to you here. I believe in doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. Very simple. I believe in doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. Where are the voices that answered the phone? As I sit and listen to a recorded voice say, press 1. Where are the young men who washed my windows, checked my oil and tires? Back then it seemed there were human beings who showed they cared about me. I miss Plotkin's grocery store where I could find candy and gum galore. I miss real voices. I miss having someone ask me, and how was your day? I wish the day when we had limited choices, only 5 stations on that mystical box, and all those wonderful images in front of me. The sounds of children playing on the street. Life seemed so simple back then, when gasoline was 29 9/10 a gallon. You know, when you think about that, you know, I think about the poem we read, Friends and Lovers. And I think how difficult it is sometimes to have relationships. And I look at this, I'm from the old school. I believe in doing unto others as you would have them do unto me. It's a real simple phrase. I mean, they even have a phrase called love your neighbor as yourself. You know, it's like in order to love somebody else, you have to love yourself. And one of the things about that poem that I found was very interesting. At the time when I wrote it, I really did not feel that much love for myself. I don't think my self-esteem was intact the way it should be. I had a lot of different things that happened during my life, you know, and it kind of tilted my way of thinking about myself. But now when I reflect back, I see how the hard work I did, you know, the work on myself, you know, reading the pledge, you know, my self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. It depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power, has gotten me through more things than you could imagine, especially, you know, when you're out in the world. How many times I've passed out those little pink cards to people, on the streets with the self-esteem a pledge on it, you know, letting people know about my radio show. I can't believe it. I passed out about maybe 10,000 of those. I mean, I called Staples and said, how many cards did I print? And we figured it out. It was about 10,000. And when I called her at that time, I only had five left. So I know there's a lot of people out there that are carrying that card or that are saying that. But it's very, very important, particularly today in today's world. Because one of the things Human Rights Commission, Dimitri Smith is a young woman. She's the chair of the Human Rights Commission. She put something on Facebook where she was very concerned that because of some people being a little bit, having a little less than others, that there maybe would be no equality. And when it comes down to it, when it really comes down to it, we're all part of a human family. And right now we see it more than ever. We really see it. When one person is harmed, it can harm all of us. And not only that, we're in a global experience now where this is happening all over the world. And, you know, it's interesting when I hear the president say Chinese virus. It's a virus that was created. They've done tests. They don't know where it came from, but it actually started with these animals because somehow the bats get infested with it, whatever the story is. But just to try to accuse a country of doing something when something like this happens, instead of just taking our hands with each other and say, look, we're going to work this out. So there's a lot to think about in this situation. And also when we start looking at trillions of dollars being printed to save our stock market and to save our businesses, I mean, if we have that kind of money to put into the culture, I think we should start thinking about our priorities. When you think of $730 billion going into defense, you know, maybe it's about time we start thinking about our priorities and we start setting things a little bit different. But before we can do that, before that happens, you know what ends up happening? We as a people have to stand up for. We have to stand up for it. Well, I'm going to read, in saying goodbye, I'm going to read one last poem. It's called Self. And I spell out the word self, S-E-L-F. So let's start with the first S, secret, E, elusive, L, looking to, F, find it. So in other words, the self is like secret to you. It's kind of elusive, looking to it, you know, trying to find it. Next thing on self, S, singular, E, evolving, L, learning to, F, find it. So you become like a human being. You know, I'm watching Satori become, you know, more singular, more involved in herself, learning to find her own self. Then the next aspect of it is, you get older, S stands for spirit. You get a little enlightened, E for enlightened, L for loving, F that you found it. Then the last leg of your life. You know, I consider myself living the last leg. I mean, I just turned 80. If I live to 100, I have 20 more years left. So the last leg is S, surrender. E, the ecstasy of surrendering. L, letting go of F, what I found. So that's kind of the self. You know, we go through an evolution, and the whole point is to find that at the end of it all, that we are really okay. Well, you've been listening to Women's Spaces. This is Elaine B. Holt. I've been your host. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for joining in. I want to thank Kathleen Haney for doing such a great job educating us about the struggles of Alice Paul. Kathleen also wrote the script. She's a joy to work with, and we'll have her on hopefully next Monday's show so you can talk about her and her process. Special thank you to my life partner, Ken Norton, for reading the poem with me, Friends and Lovers. Would love to hear from folks to let me know how you like these two futures who were presented on the show. You can email me at elaine@womenspaces.com. A reminder, or tell your friends that Women's Spaces will be aired again at 11 p.m. this evening. I'm so excited. I get to listen to my own program. Also, I'm available for speaking engagements, and if you have any announcements you'd like to have on the air, like your birthdays, anniversaries, again, happy anniversary to Alicia and Bernie. And do not hesitate to email me again at elaine@womenspaces.com. Remember, our children are the future, and we must never lose sight of that. You know, being a parent is one of the greatest blessings you have in the world. But the most important thing is you have to stand up for justice and for the rights of all children, because because as you see with our pandemic, if one person is harmed, it can harm the whole thing. Anyway, this is Elaine B. Holt. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
Woman in your life is you.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, March 30th, 2020.